Mr. Server, this is the election year in Bosnia. That would explain a lot, but still the political scene is almost boiling. It seems that each side is trying too hard to reach their goals set decades ago. In your opinion, is this a turning point in Bosnian history or just a cheap effort of political structures to stay in power?
Well, I don't really know, but it's true that this looks very much like the political forces in Bosnia doing the same things that they did in the early 90s that took Bosnia to war. The similarity is obvious. The circumstances are different. There's no Milosevic in Belgrade. There's no Tuđman in Zagreb. And frankly, nobody has the forces or the desire to use them that both Tuđman and Milosevic had. So, no, I don't think we're going back to war. I think this is a rough kind of politics that's extremely unproductive, and I hope that sooner or later Bosnian citizens will be sick of it and turn to new leadership.
Bosnian Serbs are determined these days to hold a referendum on Day of Republika Srpska despite the decision of Constitutional Court of Bosnia and Herzegovina that this would be unconstitutional. Wouldn't that undermine the Dayton Peace Accord and the Bosnian Constitution? And if so, why we have such undetermined attitude of Peace Implementation Council? How would you define the Russian position, for example?
Well, I think it's quite clear that this is a failure to implement the decision of the Constitutional Court is a challenge to the Dayton Peace Accords. The only reason the Peace Implementation Council isn't acting is because of the Russians, who are taking Republika Srpska's side in this matter. And they're playing with fire. But as I said, they're playing with fire in a situation that's completely different from the one in the early 1990s. The only people who really have a lot to lose from all of this are Bosnia's citizens. I don't think we're going back to war.
But what would be the Russian interest in this support to Serbs?
Well, the Russian interest is clearly to defy the United States, to defy the West. Putin has become more and more defiant of the West. You see it in Ukraine, you see it in Syria. And he's trying also to block NATO membership for as many Balkans countries as he can. So he uses Russia's soft power, which exists among the Serbs largely because of Orthodox cultural and religious ties. He uses that soft power, as well as whatever veto Russia may have over the PIK, to help the Serbs and defy the West.
Could the application for NATO be the reason, for example? Nobody believes any longer that it's religion or national similarity.
No, it's not. Religion, culture are utilized, but they are not the cause in any sense. I think NATO membership is a big issue for the Russians. They don't want to see any more NATO members. They're going to see Montenegro as a NATO member. They failed to block that one. They're trying hard to block Macedonia now, and they'll try hard to block Serbia and Bosnia. And, of course, in any real sense, the Bosnian Serbs do have veto power over NATO membership if they don't want it. But, from my point of view, the fact of the matter is that NATO made a great deal in the post-war period to protect Serbs in Bosnia, and it seems to me that ought to be appreciated.
If held, would this referendum lead to another one on secession, and how do you think the international community would react in that case?
I hope not. Quite clear that Dodik is, and that's clearly what he's doing. I do anticipate that if he's successful at this referendum without serious consequences, he'll eventually hold one on secession, which he's promised many, many times. But look, let's be clear. A lot of countries have held referenda to secede, and they don't succeed. Kosovo, for example, held one in the early 1990s, and nobody recognized it, so everybody forgot about it. And that's what will happen with any secession referendum by Republika Srpska. Will lead to consequences, bad ones would be my guess for citizens of Republika Srpska. There's no possibility of Republika Srpska becoming independent in any juridical sense because the international community will not recognize it. If they like, they could probably become like South Ossetia and Abkhazia and Transnistria, which are, you know, essentially Russian satellites that are not at all independent, but also aren't governed by the countries in which they're located. I wouldn't want that outcome for my entity, but you know, if Dodik wants it, you know, he can probably get something like that. Totally unsatisfactory outcome from my point of view for anybody, but if he wants it, I expect him to try for it.
Speaking of the relations with the neighboring countries, how would you explain Serbian interference into Bosnian internal affairs? Will it be tolerated?
Serbia has many roles vis-a-vis Bosnia, both externally and, frankly, internally. From my point of view, if Serbia intervenes within Bosnia to prevent an independence referendum by Republika Srpska, which would put Serbia in a totally impossible position, that's not a bad thing, that's a good thing. You know, as I said, if Republika Srpska declares independence, Serbia has a real problem, because if it recognizes independent Republika Srpska, it can kiss its European Union ambitions goodbye for a very long time. And if it doesn't recognize, well, that'll be a big issue in domestic Serbian politics, obviously. So I expect Serbia to make every effort possible to prevent an independence referendum in Republika Srpska.
The other burning point in Bosnia is Croatian matter. We continuously face the efforts by Bosnian Croat leaders to establish some sort of third entity. There were even some proposals from international community, from United States and Germany, to be precise. Do you have any knowledge of what is going on now on that matter?
The Federation was an awkward thing when we created it, and it's an even more awkward thing now in a lot of ways, because basically it's a deal, it's a very, very good deal for the Bosnian Croats, because it gave them half the Federation, and eventually Dayton gave them one-third of the state institutions, and they are a much smaller percentage of the population than that. I don't see any real possibility of a Croat entity in Bosnia today. Bosnian Croats are not only fewer than they were in 1994, they are also... the military situation that existed then gave them a stranglehold over the Bosniaks in central Bosnia. They got a good deal on weapons going to central Bosnia, and they got a terrific deal both in the Federation and at Dayton. They've been unable politically to exploit that deal as well as some of them would like, and I understand the frustration with that inability to exploit the deal as fully as they would like. But that's a political question, and it should be solved in political ways. I think there are certainly some Bosniaks who are willing to cooperate with them in resolution of those problems, and there are others who will continue to try to compete with Bosnian Croats for Bosnian Croat votes. You know, this is all politics, and politics is a good thing, not a bad thing. And, you know, as long as this isn't settled by military means, I'm happy.
What do you think that would be the good solution for this issue?
I think that's up to Bosnians to decide. You're asking a guy who's sitting in Washington, D.C., who is a strong advocate of one man, one vote. And I remember during the war in Bosnia, Krešimir Zubak said to me, "The one thing you must understand, sir, is that one man, one vote won't work here." So it's very difficult for me to prescribe solutions from Washington, D.C., but I think it's embarrassing that it's taken so many years to solve the Sadie Trinsey problem, for example, which is pretty easily solvable if you have a one-man, one-vote kind of regime. People who are not in the majority have rights under democratic regimes, and I think that's not fully appreciated in Bosnia at this point, how much democratic regimes rely on the recognition of individual rights as an antidote to majority power in democratic states. And I enjoy having the same rights as members of the majority here in the United States, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
There were no elections in Mostar for 8 years now, and there is still no agreement on that issue. So would that answer my question on how would you comment that situation?
I think it's a political impasse. It's not going to be solved by military means. It's going to be solved by politicians. And in the good old days, you had a lot of international attention, and Michael Schreiner and I negotiated an elaborate agreement on Mostar at Dayton that worked for a little while. Now you're on your own. I mean, you can't expect diplomats in Washington, D.C. to still be concerned about negotiating agreements on Mostar. You have to be concerned. I mean, that's the whole point of a democratic transition, is that these questions are now in the hands of the Bosnian people. Bosnian Croats, Bosnian Serbs, Bosniaks, Bosnian whatevers. And that's something to celebrate, not to be resentful about. And the internationals are busy elsewhere, facing much bigger problems than the Bosnian one.
Normally, I would agree with you very much, but most of the people here are very frustrated because we got this in the constitution in Dayton, which is weird, which is blocking the processes, and no tools to unblock the process because we have to change it, and it's like forever, you know.
I understand the frustration. The frustration, I perfectly well understand. It is a weird constitution. It is very difficult to get decisions made within this constitutional structure, and in particular, it's very difficult to amend the constitution. But, you know, these are the things that people in democratic societies always face, that these decisions are in their own hands. And I can't apologize for that. We did what we could at Dayton to give Bosnia a constitution that the warring parties could agree to, because the warring parties had power at the end of the war. Now, a great deal has been done since the war to try to strengthen other less nationalist forces in Bosnian society. But somehow they haven't managed to make their will felt. And at a certain point, I just have to tell you that you have to rely on yourselves, not on us.
As you said, the Balkans is not one of the priorities of American foreign policy anymore. Given the upcoming presidential elections in the States, how do you think it might impact the American position on Balkans?
I think we know that Hillary Clinton knows about the Balkans. She understands the issues there, and she will, of course, do whatever she can to protect her husband's legacy, both in Kosovo and in Bosnia. We don't know a lot about Donald Trump's personal attitudes. The American Serbian community is claiming that he's pro-Serb. They see him as a savior, almost, I would say. I don't have any reason to believe that's true. I have no reason to believe, except for his wife being Slovenian, that he knows anything about the Balkans at all. And even with his wife being Slovenian, frankly, this is not a man who knows a lot about much. So I can't predict Donald Trump really quite confident that with Hillary Clinton you'll get more or less continuation of American policy, which insists on the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Bosnia and Herzegovina, and on the independence and territorial integrity and sovereignty of Kosovo as well.
Well, good luck to all of us with your upcoming election. People are intimidated by the possibility of war. We talked about at the beginning of this interview, but how would you assess the security situation in Bosnia and in Balkans in general now?
The security situation is very different from what it was during the war. Nobody has much force available to them any longer. The Bosnian army during the war was a citizen army that had as many as, well, it was over 300,000 soldiers. And today, Bosnia has an army of how many people? You tell me, is it 20 or 30,000, something like that? And that might even be too much. But, you know, it's quite correctly. The internationals have seen to a massive demilitarization of the Balkans. Croatia now has a NATO-affiliated military, which will operate in conjunction with NATO, but it's not going to operate in Bosnia any longer. That's out of the question. Serbia's military is much reduced from what it was. Kosovo doesn't really have an army at this point, but it will have to acquire one in the future. Macedonia's army is fully compatible with NATO, has fought with the Americans in Afghanistan, but presents no threat whatsoever to anybody else. Montenegro, the same thing.
How would you comment the concerns about raising presence of people from Arab world, mass sales of land to them? It seems that Bosnian Serbs are especially concerned about possible Islamization of Balkans, fearing for security.
Look, sales of land don't in and of themselves give me any concern. I think it's quite clear that there has been some recruitment of extremists in Bosnia, as there has been also in Kosovo. I think both governments are cracking down very hard against that, and I think that's a legitimate security concern, and I think is being handled quite well at this point. So far as foreign is concerned, you know, but constantly trying to get me interested in the Russians investing in Montenegro or the Arabs investing in Bosnia. You know, frankly, and so long as these investments are made for economic reasons, they are a benefit. They're not a problem. I don't know the circumstances of the particular land purchases in the Balkans from the Arab world. I've witnessed very clearly that the Russian purchases in Montenegro have not succeeded in being used for political purposes. Montenegro is becoming a member of NATO. I would hope that the same would be true of Arab purchases in Bosnia or in Kosovo, that they're not used for political purposes, but that they bring some economic benefit to those countries.
Well, thank you, Professor Serber. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
It's my pleasure.